I found this guy on the internet who is the world record holder for the most world records held. Guinness World Records, Guinness Book of World Records, whatever you call it. His name is Astrida Furman, and he currently holds 201 world records. He is very serious about this in a lighthearted kind of way. He says that his performance is enhanced by remaining celibate and practicing meditation, and it's all part of his search for enlightenment. He's a fascinating guy, and if you have an allergy to any spiritual type language or ideas, you won't like some of what he says. But personally, I found it compelling, especially his beliefs on how not being involved in romantic or sexual relationships at all frees you up to do other things. Anyway, he's the world record holder for the most world records held or broken or both. And he said, sure, you can call me.
Hi, Lyndon.
How are you?
Very good.
Good. Where are you right now?
Well, actually, I'm just on the street, but I'll go into a quieter place. But yeah, I'm in Jamaica, New York.
Wow! I just got these chopsticks. They're totally cool. There's a record for sort of like target practice with chopsticks. Really, kind of excited about that.
So you have new throwing chopsticks?
Yeah.
Are they made for throwing, or are they made for eating, and they just happen to be good for throwing?
Yeah, no, they just happen to be. I mean, there's a record I've been practicing for. It was done by this Chinese guy, like a master in chopstick throwing.
You just picked them up?
They just came in the mail, so I'm going to go try them out. No, I mean, like, I'm always practicing for stuff. I was just at a field like about an hour ago, where we're working on a new record that we want to propose to Guinness. You can do that. Most of the records I do, like the vast majority, are ones that already exist, like 99% probably, or 95%. But sometimes, if you come up with an idea, you can submit it to them. It takes a while. You have to be patient. But if they like it, then they'll accept it as a category, and then they'll come up with the guidelines for it. So my friend had this idea of, they had these T-shirt cannons. And so so the idea would be to shoot, to see, the fastest time to catch 5 T-shirts from a T-shirt cannon and, put them on. So anyway, we're out in the field practicing, and it's so much fun. I'm always working on something. Yesterday, I was practicing for blowing up balloons underwater. It's the fastest time you can blow up 10 balloons underwater.
This was when were you working on this?
This was yesterday.
Yesterday.
Morning.
Oh, okay.
I mean, in other words, I'm just trying to give you an example like. And then today for breakfast, I was eating beans with a toothpick, and it's the most baked beans you can eat in 3 minutes. So, I was doing that for breakfast.
This is a pre-existing record.
It's a pre-existing record, a record that I actually had and someone just recently broke. I'm just saying, like, that's my life. I'm constantly, working on it. And I love it. I mean, it's not my job. I manage a health food store here in Queens. But, and I just got back from the Czech Republic, and I did, some friends invited me to go there, and I did a record at a zoo in this place called Zlín, which was for balancing a bicycle on my chin for the longest time.
Astrida was the first to hold a world record in the sport of underwater juggling, a sport he invented and calls glugling.
Glugling, yeah. I don't actually have the glugling record right now. But you know, that's one of the things on my list. But yeah, I love that. Yeah, so underwater juggling.
Yeah, you are the father of gluggling, but currently not the champion.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
But that just means you've got to spend a little bit of time underwater juggling.
And no, exactly. I have that to practice. Back.
Yeah.
Exactly. I've done it in an aquarium.
Yeah, I saw a picture of you doing that with the sharks swimming around.
Well,
and
with
stuff.
The sharks. So that was one time I did it with the sharks, and you know, the shark bumped into me. You know, so I didn't succeed on that one. But there was a previous time where
A shark messed you up by bumping into you.
I think I was in his territory or something. So he literally, you know, came by and knocked the balls out of my hands. Meaning, like, his body hit me, you know, and I dropped the ball. You know. I had done it previously in an aquarium in New Zealand, and it was great. I you know, at that time the record was only 15 minutes, so I surpassed that record, and I was, you know, it was more than a half hour. And then this one fish throughout the whole time, this one little fish, it was an orange fish, kept like just stopping right in front of me and staring at me. And it was amazing. And it after a while, it got like really annoying. And I got to the point where I decided I was going to have a staring contest with him. Unfortunately, I was in the middle of the juggling, and I think I won the staring contest, but I dropped the balls as a result. And he was really a character, because he followed me. Like, you know, I had to swim along, you know, to get to the front area where I was visible. So like going back out of the tank, he followed me the whole way, you know, out of the tank. And he was known. I found out later that he was known. You know, he was like a character. Whenever people would come to the aquarium, you know, to look, he would come right up to the glass and stare at them. So anyway, that was fun, but.
So there's a large element of showmanship here as well, right? You're putting on a show, like, otherwise you would have done it in a swimming pool.
Well, you know what, for me, I do sometimes, I mean, most of the time I don't do it like that. To me, it sort of like adds to the challenge, and I think it's fun. I mean, I just always had this idea of like juggling in an aquarium with sharks, you know, or before the sharks, it was juggling in an aquarium with fish. You know, it was just sort of like part of, like, make it more interesting and exciting. I'm not really trying to put on a show. I truthfully, you know, I get a lot of satisfaction from doing the records, and I really enjoy it more, you might say, when I'm just by myself with witnesses and a video camera, and we just do the record, you know, quietly, because you know. It's much, much more distracting when I have to, you know, do it when there's media there. I'll just really quickly tell you how I got into all this. I mean, I was deeply interested in finding a deeper meaning to life. And I started studying Eastern philosophy on my own, and eventually began meditating on my own, and I found this meditation teacher, Sri Chinmoy, who...
Sorry to interrupt. This was when you were quite young, like you were a teenager?
Yeah, as a teenager. And so I became a student of Sri Chinmoy, who lived, you know, right here in Queens. And I was never into sports at all, but he is. You know, he really believes that that's another opportunity to get closer to God, you know, through sports. You know, just like you can get closer to God through prayer and through meditation, you can also do that through sports. And I didn't really believe that because I was not an athlete at all. I thought sports was a waste of time. But because you know, he valued it, after a few years of being a student, I said, oh, you know, I'll try this out. And there was a 24-hour bicycle race in Central Park in New York. And, you know, with no training, I just went into it completely blind, and having never done any sports before. It was a 24-hour bike race around a 5-mile loop, and some of our best riders were going to try to do like 325 miles, because it's a pretty hilly course, and it's hot, and it's crowded. And the night before, we had a meditation, and my teacher was asking people, because we had a team of about 200, he was asking people of how many miles they thought they were going to do in the race. And, you know, having never done any sports before in my life, I thought, wow, if I could do maybe like 150 miles, it would be amazing, you know. And so when my turn came to say how many miles, my teacher said, so Ashrita, how many miles? 400? And now the winner of the race the year before had done 435 miles. And so, like, and he knew that I wasn't athletic at all. So, you know, I decided that I was going to, you know, try to do that. You know, even though I felt like, you know, he has a vision of what I can do that I don't have. And so I just decided, I actually wrote out my will because I thought I might die. Even, you know, I mean, I was just a kid. I didn't really have anything, but, you know, I had a rabbit and two doves. You know, I wanted to make sure they were to be taken care of. So I went out there, and it was one of the greatest experiences of my life because on the bike, I used all the different meditation techniques that I had learned from my teacher, you know, just like breathing, visualization, chanting. So like whenever something came up, I would just, you know, let's say if I started to get a cramp or started, you know, I would just do a visualization. And this is all on the bike, you know. And so I got off the bike for 5 minutes in the 24-hour period. Halfway through, it was midnight, and I was riding around the course. Like, the course was practically empty. Most of the, you know, except for the real serious riders, almost everybody, you know, went home, and they come back the next morning. I was with the lead pack. I was riding with the lead pack. And I ended up doing 405 miles and tying for third place overall. And so I realized right away that that this wasn't me, you know, the Ashrita, the body. This was something deeper. This was my soul. This was, and it was something. First of all, if I could do it, means anybody could. You know, I mean, like I don't feel like I'm a great athlete or anything. It was all from the power of the meditation. And so I said, you know, that day, I mean, I stumbled off my bike and I said, I'm gonna break a Guinness record because I'd always been a fan of the Guinness Book. But I'm going to do it not to, you know, get my picture in the book. I'm going to do it to tell people about the power of meditation. That's what I've been doing for the last 40 years.
If Chinmoy would have said 450, do you think you would have done 450?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's an interesting question, but yeah, because I feel, you know, we were talking about self-transcendence. I feel like you have the capacity to do anything. And so, like, if I was going to transcend myself going from zero to, you know, to 400, let's say, why not 450? I mean, you know, like with many of the records, like here, the first record I ever did was for jumping jacks. The record was 20,000 and I could only do 50 when I first started. And I, you know, I saw the record in the book and I said, okay, I'm going to start training for this. And I would do like a little meditation before the training, and I would just do, you know, 50 or 100 more each practice. But so I ended up doing 27,000, broke the record. And then someone did 30,000, I did 33,000, and some did 40,000, and I did 44,000 or 45,000. And so, you know, like, at what, you know, as you realize, you know, going back, like, I probably could, instead of doing 27,000 the first time, I probably could have done 45,000. I mean, you know, it's all a matter of, you know, how much sort of, how deep you want to go, you know, because in the end, our inner strength is inexhaustible and it's there's no limit to it.
Yeah, there's, I'm trying to remember, there's actually some research that absolutely supports what you're saying there, where they'll take cyclists or something, and they'll tell them that they're going slower than they actually are,
right,
and then they
right,
just compensate.
Right.
Like, people just have an idea about how fast they can go, and then
right,
they just
right,
will meet that expectation that they have.
So, you see, that's the thing. That's one of the things that we really strongly believe in, is that the mind is our limiting factor. And that, you know, the mind is constantly doubting. And so we feel like through meditation, we go deeper, and we call it the spiritual heart. You know, not we're not talking about the physical heart, but we talk about the spiritual heart. And that, so when we meditate on our spiritual heart. And like, the idea is to try more and more, during your day, to be in your heart rather than in your mind. And like whenever we do these things, you know, these feats, you might say, it's like really important not to listen to your mind. You know, your mind, and I've had that experience so many times where I'll be in the middle of one of these things and I'm in pain and it looks like it's not going to happen. And my mind keeps telling me, you know, just give up. You can't do this. And I really have to battle my mind and sort of, you know, quiet it down and then go deep within.
So you've also invented distance sack racing?
Yep, I did actually invent that. You're right.
Land rowing?
Well, you know, I didn't invent the distance because there. Let me just think. I don't think so because I think there was. Well, I think there was a 10K. I think I invented the mile sack race.
Oh,
but
I
think there was a 10K that was in existence, and then I did the 10K, and then I suggested the mile, which I did against the Yak. I was thinking, what can I do in Mongolia? You know, that would be fun. And so then I said, well, you know, they're one of the few places in the world that have yaks. So I figured, okay, you know, I'll race a yak, you know, in a sack. Of course, the yak's not in the sack. I'm in the sack.
You added the yak for the rhyming purposes.
I thought it would be really fun, you know, to race against a yak. I mean, because I'd never even seen a yak in real life. You know, I figured, wow, so it gave me an opportunity. I went to a yak farm, picked up the slowest yak, and when I got there, they had switched yaks on me. You know, they but it turns out that the yak I chose was actually better. You know, the other yak got tired. I guess they're not that great. You know, they're more endurance rather than, you know, speed. So, you know, he got tired.
So how do you go about explaining this sort of thing to the people with the yaks?
Yeah, it wasn't easy. There was a language barrier, and they were very, very nice, you know. But I think, you know, we finally, you know, they think, they in general think that I'm crazy. And so they have this, you know, crazy American who for some reason, you know, wants to do this. But, you know, they are into it. You know, they have like a childlike nature in general, the Mongolians. It wasn't that hard to explain, really.
It seems very difficult to explain
really?
With a language. I mean, I've had a hard time ordering a hamburger with a language barrier.
Right.
So in this case, like, not only are you saying I'm going to be breaking a world record of hopping in a sack, but I also happen to want a yak to be there. You made the world's largest pencil?
The funny thing about the pencil was that, you know, it has to be, you know, dimensionally, proportionally exactly the same as a pencil. But anyway, so we got this pencil, and we got a crane to lift it so it was pointing up, you know, because it was much more impressive. You know, it's 76 feet up, you know, in the air. I mean, you know, standing 76 feet.
What was it in diameter then? It looks huge. I can see a picture here from American Press, it looks like.
Right.
That it's got this forklift next to it.
Yeah, I don't actually remember what it was
it
in diameter.
It says it weighs 22,000 pounds.
Yeah. I remember that. We had the crane had a scale on it. So anyway, you know, after we lifted it up, we sort of had like a little sort of, you know, dedication ceremony kind of, and so we put it back down. And about, you know, a couple hours later, the police car pulls up, and they say that they got a report that there was a possible missile in Jamaica, Queens. And they were told to investigate. So
it sounds like something from, I don't know, Monty Python or something.
No, I know, but I'm telling you, I'm not making this up. It's 100% for real.
Okay, so you did a bunch of stuff with pogo sticks.
Right, yeah.
Bowling.
I love jumping. I love jumping in general. The act of jumping is fun. I mean, I love a lot of the records I have is jumping jacks, you know, hopping, you know, hopscotch, you know, skipping. I mean, I've just a lot of sort of jumping around.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'm thinking, like, how often do people jump in their lives?
Yeah, but you know what? It's fun. You know, there's an expression, jumping for joy. And you know what? I find like it works reverse. You know, like if you jump, you get joy. And I just, you know, if you think about it, it was interesting. Some guy made a documentary about skipping. And when I talk about skipping, I mean like kids skip without a jump rope. And you know, if you look at a kid who's skipping, they're skipping because they're happy. It's just an expression of happiness. And I find that when I skip, that's what happens. I mean, I get happy. So, you know, it really seems to work. And oh yeah, so this guy was doing the documentary about skipping, and he was sort of trying to. It was a bit of mental, but he was trying to sort of figure out, why do we stop skipping? I mean, as kids, we skip, and then at some point, you know, like we become maybe, you know, more self-conscious or whatever, and we stop skipping. So that's what, you know, the point of his documentary, you know, was like, you know, don't be self-conscious, you know. But I really love it, and I think that, you know, that's another thing about this path that I'm on, is like we try to be childlike, you know, not childish, but try to be more, you know, like, have more faith, have more spontaneous, you know, be childlike. And I, you know, skipping and jumping fits right into that.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing immature about skipping down the sidewalk. And in some ways, it's less adult-like to restrain yourself from doing that.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. I think the distinction, I mean, the way I understand it is like, childish means, yeah, you're being immature, you're being like irresponsible, or you know, whereas childlike means like you have a childlike,
you're not restricted, by other people's rules, comes natural, you say what's on your mind, you feel like jumping, so you jump, you feel like playing, so you play, you were saying before. The jumping can induce the joy rather than feel joy and
absolutely.
Then respond.
Yeah, I really believe in that. Yeah,
it's like the whole put a smile on your face. If you can't do that, put a pencil between your teeth, because you'll feel different when your mouth is in that position.
Well, you know, that's something that my teacher talks about too. Is, you know, like if you're feeling depressed, smile. You know, that it'll help. It'll help you get over that depression. You know, just that very act of smiling.
So you're single?
Yes.
I know that Chinmoy does make recommendations to people on that sometimes.
Oh yeah, no, he's pretty strict about that actually.
Okay.
I mean, if you're on his path, I mean, in other words, if you come to his path married, then that's fine, you can stay married. But if you come to his path single, then you stay single. Like,
really?
He doesn't want, yeah, absolutely. He doesn't want people like he wants you to be focused on your spiritual life. And he doesn't want you, you know, dating or thinking about, you know, finding your soulmate or, you know, anything like that. It's really a matter of, like, what do you want in life? You know, what are your priorities in life? And, you know, the way I came to the spiritual life was, I mean, I started searching. I really felt like there had to be a deeper meaning. My father is a successful attorney, and I saw myself going that way. I mean, you know, I was really, he said I was, you know, smart. I would often comment about cases that he told me about, and he said, you know, that I was right spot on, you know, as far as, and so, I mean, I could see where I was going with the whole thing. And I said, that's not where I want to go. That's not the goal. There's gotta be a deeper, you know, reason for being on earth. Like, I want to devote my life to trying to attain, you know, enlightenment. And, so, you know, in that case, I'm not putting anyone else down, but in, you know, my own personal case, I really don't want to have, you know, that other responsibility of having, you know, another person to think about, or or a family to, you know, be responsible for. It's like, I really want this. I want to devote my full concentration on this.
Hmm. Like that is sacrilege to a lot of people. Oh, you're not, don't want
to. Oh, you know, I remember, it's interesting. I used to get a ride. This is when I was going to high school, and I was, you know, a student of Sri Chinmoy. I would get a ride, because I lived about a mile and a half away. I would wait for the bus, and sometimes this guy, a very nice guy, would drive me to school. If, you know, he happened to see me, you know, waiting at the bus stop. And so I told him, you know, I'm on this path, and I'm really, really happy. And I told him about the celibacy thing, and it flipped him out. He just went crazy. He, you know, he was like screaming at me, "You can't do this!" You know, and like, why? You know, it's for some reason it really bothers people.
So a lot of people would say, "Well, there's just something in us that drives us to have sex and partner up in these kinds of things, and it's unhealthy not to respond to that." What would you say to that?
I would say that, you know, we're all evolving. Absolutely, we do have this sex drive, which, you know, is part of our lower nature. Transcending, you know, the physical animal, you know, baser instincts, you know, put you into a higher state, you know, where you can feel closer to God. And, you know, and again, I'm saying it, you know, from an individual, you know, personal basis. I can't say what spiritually is the right thing for other people, but I know 100% for sure that's the right thing for me.
There's that whole question that people say you're supposed to ask yourself. If I was the only one left on Earth, would I still want to do this?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. 100%, you would still be eating your beans in the morning with a toothpick? Oh.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Because I get so much satisfaction from it. I'm not doing it for anybody else, really. I'm doing it for my own. I mean, I want to offer joy to other people, but, you know, that's not my main motivation. I mean, I get so much satisfaction from the transcendence. And it's true, if I break the baked bean eating record, it's not, you know, a great thrill. But you know what? If I break the record for cutting apples with a samurai sword after training for a year, that is a great thrill.
Well, thank you very much for listening. That just about does it, or that does do it. Normally I have the goodbye and everything recorded, but yeah, I screwed that one up. But anyhow, on this episode, you heard music from Les Jupes, Royal Canoe, Record of the Week Club, Tom Keenan, and the Apparat Organ Quartet. Again, thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon.